Welcome to Recovery Talk on AM 600 The Answer. Recovery Talk is brought to you by The Refuge, a healing place. The Refuge is a leading treatment center for men and women struggling with trauma, depression, and addiction. Listen today as our expert staff educates you and guides you in the areas of addictions, depression, and trauma so you can be better informed. To be a part of the program, call 904-222-TALK. That's 904-222-8255. Now please welcome the Refuge expert staff members.
Hello, and welcome to Recovery Talk. We're here live every Sunday evening from 4 to 5 p.m., and we would love to hear from you. I'm Shay Kimbrough, Business Development Coordinator with the Refuge of Healing Place, and your host for this evening's show. Over the last 2 weeks, it has been impossible to turn on the radio or television without hearing references to the number of domestic violence instances in the NFL. From morning television shows to dedicated sports networks, the media has been abuzz with facts, figures, and plenty of blame to spread to the coaches, players, executives, and even the commissioner himself. And who would blame them? This is a tragedy. Ray Rice and Adrian Peterson are among 57 cases of alleged incidences of domestic violence in the National Football League since 2006. While the implications that these players face are extremely serious, we're missing the mark on what this conversation should actually be about. What is the root of this problem in our country? Because domestic violence is certainly not a new phenomenon, and there are many factors experiences that feed this problem. And there's a strong psychological tie between what a person experiences during their childhood and how those experiences influence the way we then go on to behave in adulthood. Tonight, we're going to talk about these experiences in our childhood, how they've affected the way we think, act, and treat others in our life. We'll also be discussing generational trauma and how trauma experienced in one generation of a family can affect generations to come. I want to remind you that we are live and we'll be taking your calls throughout the show at 904-222-TALK. That's 904-222-8255. Your comments and questions are welcomed and we hope to hear from you. Our guest tonight is Bill Kinlock. Bill is the Director of Family and Alumni Services at the Refuge of Healing Place and facilitates a program every 6 weeks for families of our clients to come and work together in an effort to begin to recognize and heal generational trauma. Bill, thank you so much for being with us this evening.
Hey, Shay. Thanks. It's an honor for me to be here with you.
So as Family Week Director at the Refuge, you have a real hands-on experience with the families of the very courageous men and women who come to the Refuge to get help for their addiction and trauma work. Can you just briefly describe for our listeners really what Family Week is?
Sure, it'd be my pleasure. I'm very lucky to be able to work with the families who get to come on property and work with the clients that we have here. It's a six-week program that we do. It lasts about 4.5 days. And we really get to meet the families, the willingness of the people that come on property that want to heal their family. It's not just about sending somebody here to be in treatment, but it's about wanting the whole family to get better. When someone is in addiction or in the throes of trauma in their life, trying to survive every day, that affects the entire family, whether it's, you know, monetarily or emotionally. So the family part of this trauma piece is so important because normally, and normal is a kind of a word that's hard to throw around because normal, it's been thrown, you know, said that normal is a setting on a washing machine, and normal is different for everybody. And to see these families come on property wanting to heal their family and to face the problems that maybe everyone was a little too used to not talking about, it's really brave, and it's really a privilege to be here with these people.
So, Bill, what made you want to work with families?
Well, I got to say it's probably a little bit because of my own story. I come from a dysfunctional family. I was adopted at 3.5 weeks old, and my parents were wonderful. I was lucky to have them. I was lucky for them to adopt me. Did they also hand me down some dysfunctional traits? Absolutely. I don't feel that they did that intentionally. I kind of think that they live their life, and for me, I believe my parents wanted to give me a better life than what they had. So, and I feel that in that, looking at their life from that perspective, they are absolute heroes. My father grew up in the projects in Newark. He was one of four sons. His father left his family when he was 5 years old, and he was the oldest of the four sons. He had very little understanding of how to even be a father or what a healthy father would look like. And I know he did his absolute best, working 2-3 jobs a lot of times in our lives so that he would be able to provide for us, because, you know, going back quite a few years, men were measured from that yardstick of how much money do you make? You know what I mean? How good of a provider are you? And maybe not so much family time. So that seemed to really fit, and he did his best working all the time, maybe to the point of I didn't even see him a lot. My mother, who cared for us deeply, she worked also as we were growing up to make ends meet. I don't know a whole lot about her story. Her trauma in her life growing up must have been so severe that she never really shared stories about her childhood with us. My father, who was married to her for 40 years, doesn't know any stories about her childhood growing up. And she never shared anything, so I can imagine the trauma that she grew up with. So my parents gave me a great life in comparison to how they grew up. You know what I mean? They're absolute heroes. But I did get some of this generational trauma handed down to me from the dysfunction that they had in their families going back. I'm an adult child. I work a 12-step program. Adult Children of Alcoholics is the name of that program. It's been instrumental in my life. Really turned things around for me. I got to about when I was 40 years old, I had trouble managing relationships and over again had trouble managing relationships and didn't really know how to act. That adult child terminology is kind of was odd to me, and I didn't understand it until I really got to work the program. We learn survival skills growing up as children to survive dysfunctional homes, either whatever that might be, perfectionistic shaming homes or ritualistic beliefs or, you know, religious homes, however we might be growing up, whatever that looked like for us. Those survival skills we take with us when we become adults. And those survival skills don't help us so much, you know, being the class clown, maybe being the scapegoat. You know, there's lots of different terminology that we use in the program for what our role was in the family to, you know, kind of get by. People pleaser is a huge one, which was one of the things I was. I always wanted to make everybody, you know, get along and try to diffuse any kind of argument that were ever going on. And by the way, people pleasers make outstanding employees. Real easy to fit into a workaholic perspective when you're a people pleaser. But not necessarily the best thing for us as mm-hmm. people, because we're kind of spending all of our time being people pleasers and not living our own lives.
Right. Well, unfortunately, Bill, we're going to have to take a quick break. Everyone, stay with us. We'll hear more from Bill after the break, and later we'll be discussing how seeking treatment for trauma and mental health disorders can break the cycle of generational trauma, and how star athletes like Brandon Marshall are using their past to help our future. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Recovery Talk live right here on AM 600 and FM 100.3, The Answer. You can call in today at 222-TALK. That's 222-8255, and be a part of the conversation. Back to Recovery Talk in 60 seconds.
The Refuge, a healing place, is a leading treatment program for men and women struggling with addictions, trauma, and co-occurring issues such as depression. The Refuge is nationally renowned for working with its clients to create real, long-term recovery. With their caring staff, you begin to unravel the underlying causes of your issues and gain the strength to accept and overcome them. They take a unique trauma-aware approach to treating addiction and co-occurring issues that emphasizes holistic treatment of the mind, body, and spirit. Their safe private campus is located an hour north of Orlando in Ocala, Florida, and features residential and outpatient treatment as well as drug detox. You can call them for a free confidential consultation, 866-612-6610, or visit their website, therefuge-ahealingplace.com. Welcome back to Recovery Talk on AM 600, The Answer, brought to you by The Refuge, a healing place. The Refuge is a leading treatment center for men and women struggling with trauma, depression, and addiction. To be a part of the show, call now, 904-222-TALK. That's 904-222-8255. Once again, The Refuge expert staff members.
Welcome back to Recovery Talk. This is Shay Kimbrough with The Refuge, and tonight we're talking about the effects of generational trauma on our society. Joining us is Bill Kinlock, Director of Alumni and Family Services at The Refuge. As a reminder, we are taking calls at 904-222-TALK. That's 904-222-8255. Please give us a call. Now, before we went to break, we were talking about the family program at The Refuge, and we were blessed enough to hear some of Bill's story, and we wanted to talk about how, you know, these family programs help to identify and uncover generations of trauma that have been passed down from a parent to a child and across many generations. But really, this concept of generational trauma is so much bigger than we once ever thought. I'm going to read an excerpt from the Aboriginal Healing Foundation, and they describe intergenerational or multi-generational trauma happening when the effects of trauma are not resolved in one generation. When trauma is ignored and there's no support for dealing with it, the trauma will be passed from one generation to the next. What we learn to see as normal when we are children, we pass on to our own children. Children who learn that, say, sexual abuse is normal and who have never dealt with the feelings that come from this may inflict physical and sexual abuse on their own children. Now, the aspect of what we learn to see as normal when we are children, we pass on to our own children, really struck me as a powerful statement. And when we look back to this whole issue in the NFL right now, this seems to ring so profoundly true. With the media covering so much of the abuse side of the story, I have to wonder why no one is willing to say, why is this happening? Why is this normal to these men? And what can we do to break this cycle? Bill, why do you think the media is so focused on the abuse itself?
Well, Shay, I really think media-wise, it's really more about ratings. They're looking at the explosion and not what's causing it. It's more difficult a lot of times for us to look inward and see or say, you know, this horrible thing happened to the child, you know what I mean? What was the person thinking that did it? A lot of times people think we're looking for excuses or ways to cut people a break, and that's not really what it's about at all. Who wants this to continue in the family tree? Who wants this to continue down the line? We often talk about here that hurt people who hurt people. And I see it here when we're doing the family program here at The Refuge. Sometimes we'll have a client here, and their father will come, and the grandfather will come for the family week. And the ideas and the things that are learned by the client that's here will share it with his father, with the grandfather sitting in the room. And the grandfather will realize he treated his son the same way his son is treating his now grandson.
Right.
And understanding, wow, I did not realize, you know, that I was hurting you when I was doing this. I thought this is the way to raise a child. And if you want to tie it into Adrian Peterson and in the stick incident, if he was raised that way and he's a pro football player, how is he to think that didn't work for him? You know what I mean? He might have hated it when it happened, but looking back in retrospect, who wants to think that their families are bad? Who wants to think that their families would hurt them? It's a lot easier to swallow and just say, you know, they cared about me. And let's face it, I can attest that a lot of times abuse is hidden with love. And if I didn't care about you, I wouldn't do this. And these are tough things to face and tough denials to deal with. But the reality of it is, you know, trust was broken. You know, there's a certain amount of fear for not living up to expectations. Some of that perfectionism comes through. And I think the media, it's easy to focus on, oh, this horrible incident, let's punish this person. I mean, these are very confusing things for people to deal with because everybody is looking at domestic violence from a different standpoint. It's how were you raised? What was normal in your home? You know, even the NFL, I mean, this professional organization struggles with even getting you know, what kind of a reprimand, right? You know, they're talking about suspending players for their whole life, but are they helping these people get help?
Right.
You know what I mean? Are they looking at it from, hey, you know what? This guy has maybe a skewed version of what bringing up a child is. You know, maybe he should get some help. You know, and maybe not have everyone focus so much on, okay, now he's out of the NFL. Now he's ruined his life from something he didn't even realize what he was doing was wrong. And is he going to be able to get the help he needs? Because right now I'm sure he's dealing with the remorse and shame of what he
right.
did.
And the shame is
and
such a big
piece. And what kind of trauma
piece.
Did that bring? Mm. A huge piece. It's paralyzing. The shame can rattle his whole family all the way back up the chain. The good news is it can also go the other way. If he gets help, he can break the chain.
Right.
If he gets help and realizes this is not the only way that I can raise children, that there are other ways that I can do this, maybe they just haven't been brought to his attention. You know, Maya Angelou has a great quote that I use all the time for my own healing. It's, I did the best I could with the information I had, and when I learned more, I did better. And I think that's a really healthy way to look at a lot of this, what we call normal behavior. If that's all you've known, you're going to do what you know. And
yeah, so you mentioned that, the word normal, and you know, and you mentioned that earlier. And you know, when you look at people like Adrian Peterson and you look at how he was, you know, he did grow up in a culture where that type of discipline, for lack of a better word, was used. And, you know, I grew up in the South, and I know that, you know, spanking was very commonplace here. And if you look at people like Brandon Marshall, who grew up in a home of domestic violence with a mother who was physically and emotionally abusive, you know, that is their normal, but I think it's hard for society to wrap its mind around that being quote-unquote normal.
I agree, and I believe that people who were raised from a different perspective are horrified by what they hear. And I'm sure if you looked around, you could find a few people that are on the other end of that scale. That's like, oh, he only got hit with a switch? That's nothing compared to my life.
Right.
I mean, I think that if you wanted to put that on a sliding scale, you could probably find people on both ends of that story. And again, that kind of refers to the normal, you know, that whole word normal, which I said is really hard to swallow a lot of times. But if someone's experience growing up was worse than that, they're not going to think that that's a horrible thing. And they're going to say, I don't understand why they're coming down so hard on him. You know what I mean? My life was worse than that, and I'm okay. You know, I got over it. One of those other terms that we hear a lot of times, which, you know, is counterproductive to growth and to healing and to love, you know. But, again, the normal society and what people have deemed as healthy behavior, you know, they're going to explode when they see things like this happening because that wasn't their normal. Or perhaps it was normal for some of them, but they've broken that cycle. And they've gotten help and they've moved on.
Yeah, and I think,
so
it's very
controversial.
Yeah, and, you know, you spoke a little earlier about fear. And, you know, I'm always reminded, you know, the things that outrage us the most are often things that we see in ourselves that we don't like. And, you know, you think about this, issues like this bring up things that we don't want to see in our family. And they bring up the knowing that, I may have been raised in a family like that. Which then, you know, fear drives so much outrage.
Yes, I completely agree. The having to swallow it yourself, you know, when you were growing up, you know, and now you see somebody else doing it and you know what it's like to be on that side, to be on the receiving end of that. And again, yes, that brings up your events of your own childhood. Your brain will take you right back to that time when you were young and someone was hitting you with a stick. You know what I mean? And that fear, all that trauma that was stored up in your body at that time, because what we've learned about trauma here at the Refuge is that trauma is you're afraid you're going to die.
Right.
And as a small child, that's where that comes from. You think at that moment you're going to die. And that stuff gets stored up if you freeze in that moment, you know, if you don't react because there's a much larger adult in charge of that situation, you hold all that inside. All that self-preservation energy is all stored inside of you. If you don't let that out, it's going to be there. It's never going to leave. Right. And when you see someone living out the same scenario that you had in your life when you were afraid for your life, there's the fear and how that translates to the outrage. And something needs to be done, and we need to protect children, and that all this conversation starts. But like you said in the beginning of the program, this is not a new situation. You know, domestic violence and abuse on children especially, this has happened when I was a child. Mm-hmm. Surely I'm in my late 40s now, and growing up, I knew all the kids. You'd see them coming into school with bruises and black eyes. You'd see them in church.
Right.
You know, and this was, you know, this just happened, and no one talked about it. It was swept under the rug, and now that we have a society where we can see more, interact more, everything's on the internet, all the video is there, it is. It's reliving the events for people.
Yeah. And, you know, and I'd like to also talk briefly about, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, this generational trauma at the refuge, and we talk about, you know, what we pass down from one generation to the next. And, you know, I'm still stuck on, you know, what becomes your normal. And I think about my upbringing. You know, I grew up in a home. My grandparents raised me for the better part of the first half of my life. And, you know, my grandfather was raised by a man who survived the Great Depression, you know, and where there was that fear of, you know, everything's going to be gone, everything could be taken away from us, and, you know, you've got to work hard, you've got to save, you've got to, you know, do everything right. And I think about watching him as a child, you know, growing up, and he was distant, you know, because he didn't have that nurturing side, because his job was protector. His job was, you know, to go out and do that. And I look back now, and, you know, at first I think about, you know, normal I thought our life was in that time, but I look at the good things I took from him as well. You know, I am now a hard worker. I, you know, understand the value of a dollar. And so I think it's such a double-edged sword, you know, is that we take in so much from our family, both good and bad. So how can you then separate those two?
Well, I think a lot of that is going to go back to, what are you struggling with in your life? Anything you've taken from your family that is a strength for you, that's something that is helping carry you through your life, you're not going to have a trouble with. It won't be causing you problems in your relationships. It won't be causing you problems in your daily life, financially or emotionally. It's the things we look at. It's our belief systems and how they affect our daily life. If we are in dysfunctional relationships because we have trouble communicating with others, that's going to show up in our life in a way that it's going to hurt us. So there must be some kind of pain that's going to drive you to want to change or learn to do something different. All of the great, wonderful things that we do learn from our families, they do pass on good and bad, and we take with us what we can. Sometimes we take the good, and sometimes we take the bad. But if we can somehow filter out, take those strong points with us, and then the things that are causing us pain, that we can take time and work on those, from support groups, from just sharing with other people that have similar problems, finding out ways they've overcome some of their struggles. There's usually pain is usually the largest motivator for people to want to make a change in their life. So whatever we may have brought with us that is not working for us in our daily life, something we brought with us from childhood, then that's usually the thing that's going to make us want to change.
All right, Bill, we're going to take another short break. Thank you for being with us. When we come back from the break, we'll continue this discussion with Bill. And as a reminder, we are here live, and we'll be taking your calls at 904-222-TALK. That's 904-222-8255. We'll be right back after your local news, weather, and traffic. Stay with us.
You're listening to Recovery Talk Live right here on AM 600 and FM 100.3, The Answer.
News, traffic, and weather. Always informative, keeping you connected, updated on the stories that matter. We've got you covered. AM 600 is The Answer.
CBS News Update, I'm Harley Carnes. The search for the ambush shooter suspect in the Pocono Mountains has intensified. Pennsylvania State Police say Eric Freen is suspected of killing one state trooper and wounding another before escaping into the woods where he's very much at home.
The suspect is still considered armed and dangerous.
He may be armed by one fewer guns because police say they found one hidden along the trail.
We are making significant progress in the investigation, and we found several items that Freen has abandoned or hidden for possible future use. Some of those items include an AK-47 style weapon and some other magazines and ammunition.
That's Lieutenant Colonel George Bibbins.
We're asking the public not to approach or encounter any suspicious person or vehicles, but rather to report those immediately, and we'll be glad to have someone follow up on it as soon as possible.
Police think Freen has prepared for this encounter with police for months, maybe years. CBS News Update, I'm Harley Carnes.
I have a question. Who handles the plumbing, HVAC, industrial, carpentry, and welding for large and small commercial buildings?
That's easy. You're talking about mechanical contracting, and the leader in Florida is W.W. Gay. W.W. Gay has been a licensed contractor for over 50 years.
Well, what about energy management, and who turns off the lights and AC on the weekends?
That's called building control automation projects, and yes, you name it, when it comes to commercial, industrial, and engineering, W.W. Gay self-performs all services. HVAC, plumbing, piping, welding, carpentry, general contracting, steel erection, concrete, and temperature control.
I thought I recognized the name. I see W.W. Gay trucks everywhere.
W.W. Gay's expertise includes successful project completion within the public, private, and military sectors. Check out the projects they've done and call the leader in Florida, the name we can trust, W.W. Gay Mechanical Contractor, Inc. Online at wwgmc.com or by phone at 904-388-2696.
AM 600 and FM 100.3. You want the latest traffic and weather? We've got the answer.
4:33 on your Sunday afternoon. AJ Davis with your traffic and weather together. Look out for a problem in Nassau County. There's been an accident. Lem Turner Road at Spring Lake Drive in Callahan. All lanes reported open up in Nassau County. Also, on the south side near Mandarin, San Jose Boulevard at Big Tree Lane, there's been an accident there with injuries, unfortunately. The roadway is reported as being open. Could be some slight delays there. Watch out for that. Another accident well into the clearing stages. This was an accident with injuries in Clay County, Blanding Boulevard southbound at Old Jennings Road approaching Middleburg. The road is reported as being clear. Also in Putnam County, Walker Drive at Robert Avenue in Interlaken, there's been an accident with injuries, unknown roadblocks at that one. We've got a Chamber of Commerce weather situation today. Mostly clear tonight, low about 72. Then Monday we'll start out in the sun with a high about 87. Right now, 86 degrees in Jacksonville at AM 600 and FM 100.3. The answer.
Welcome back to Recovery Talk on AM 600, The Answer. Brought to you by The Refuge, a healing place. The Refuge is a leading treatment center for men and women struggling with trauma, depression, and addiction. To be a part of the show, call now. 904-222-TALK. That's 904-222-8255. Once again, The Refuge expert staff members.
Welcome back to Recovery Talk. Again, I'm Shay Kimbrough, Business Development Coordinator at The Refuge, a healing place. We are here this evening with Bill Kinlock, Director of Alumni and Family Services at The Refuge. And as a reminder, we are live and we'll be taking your calls at 904-222-TALK. That's 904-222-8255. Now, throughout the show, we have been discussing the big stories in the NFL this week and how so much of that is rooted in generations of unresolved trauma. Much of what we've discussed has been more direct victimization of a child by a parent or a spouse from another spouse. But I feel we would be remiss if we did not discuss neglect as one of the huge traumas that affects our society today, that lack of emotional bonding between parents, siblings, and extended family members that has really become one of the growing generational traumas that we pass on. So, Bill, why is the feeling of abandonment and neglect such a truly a primal wound, as we call it at The Refuge, for children today?
Well, when we're doing the Family Week program, a lot of this actually comes up quite often, feeling of disconnection, feeling of abandonment. We talk about that, even though you're in a healthy family, what you would think, because mom and dad are there, maybe siblings are there, and there may be lots of stuff going on in the house. There could be addiction going on in the house. There could be lots of workaholism. There could be one parent taking care of another parent. There could be someone sick in the home. All the attention is away from maybe one or two of the children. They're going to have to figure out things for themselves, that feeling lost, that panic, again, that fear comes in. Am I going to be okay? You know, why do I have to do all these things myself? Why do I have to grow up so soon? Why am I 5 years old and I'm learning how to cook dinner? Why am I taking care of myself? You don't really ask yourself these questions when you're that age, but you're feeling that insecurity, that lack of that emotional bonding. We hear stories all the time about kids that, you know, I was in a house, but nobody listened to me. Nobody understood me. I didn't feel like I was a part of the family. I felt like, you know, whatever I did didn't really matter. I was the invisible child. That's one of the terms that we hear where, you know, I came and went and did my own thing and nobody really seemed to pay much attention to me. And again, none of this really is done maliciously by anyone. Everyone's trying to get through their lives and what's going on in their own, fighting their own battle, so to speak, in their lives. But sometimes people slip through the cracks. You know, someone could come from a family where both parents were working and not feel this way, because maybe there was a deeper emotional bond between the parents and the children. Maybe they understood that emotional bond from the upbringing they had, and they knew how to connect to the children better, even though they required more from them, maybe because the family was struggling financially or maybe going through emotional struggles with someone being ill in the home. They're still able to still have that emotional bond and connect, and they might not be getting all of their needs met, but they understand the situation and they feel like they're still a part of the family. It's when there's addiction in the home or maybe there's domestic violence in the home and children feel more comfortable sometimes being on their own than being a part of the violence or being a part of what's going on. And they have to grow up very quickly. They abandon their childhood and they become adults at a very young age, making their own food, cleaning their own dishes, taking care of other siblings. And this is some of that neglect that when it gets into older life, you have trust issues with other people, struggle in relationships, constant feeling of financial insecurity. You know, you may worry and stress about losing a job so much because you grew up with financial insecurity and that trauma gets handed down to you.
I wanted to really kind of to harp on a point that you brought up, in that sometimes this neglect is not intentional. And I think the truth is that with a society today where both parents are often having to work and we have more single-parent homes and we have more kids in the latchkey system, I think parents are trying to do their best and can oftentimes maybe be a little defensive when you throw around the word neglect. But the bottom line is it is still happening, and it is creating that uncertainty in the relationship, which, like you said, you know, really people who go with that really struggle with intimacy later in their life.
Yes, absolutely. The whole family dynamic, I mean, however you want to look at it, it's kind of falling down. Everyone's getting very good at interfacing with machines and electronics, and that whole connection between families is kind of falling apart. And kids are self-nurturing with computers. They're taking care of themselves with movies and the internet and texting with their friends, and their face is always in their phone, and they're losing that family connection. You know, and no one's doing this intentionally. The gap is created by maybe the family's very busy and everyone's trying to do their best to you know, survive daily, you know, to get through their tough work day and the kids' schedules and everything going on. So there's these gaps of time created. And, you know, we learn to fill these times as best we can, you know, to stimulate our own minds and to feel connected to somebody or something. And it turns out that we were going for electronic connection. And we're losing that personal, that emotional bond with the parents and the children.
Yeah, you know, and I struggle personally, you know, to think of how seeing, you know, generations, you know, I have an 18-year-old niece now who is, you know, her phone essentially makes her heartbeat, and, you know, her connection is all through that. You know, they text, they don't call, they don't have eye contact. And I, you know, I wonder how, you know, those kind of traditional family values that we as a society have had are going to be lost, and how that's going to affect, you know, her children. You know, if she doesn't have that ability to connect or is not comfortable with that connection, you know, how is that going to affect the rest of our generations to come?
Yeah, this is actually a pretty well-debated issue amongst worlds and philosophers, and a lot of people talk about. It seems like, I'm kind of stepping way back here and looking at the bigger picture. The world goes in direction that's focused on. And if we can focus on, you know, loving each other and being connected to each other, we can turn, like, FaceTime. And there's a lot of other tools out there that we can use to reconnect with people, to get visual cues from how people are doing based on how their face looks, because we're used to seeing their face. You know, there's ways we can break down this electronic barrier and reconnect with each other, but it's all going to be based on what we're all focused on as a society, and whatever society that might be. You know, there's different parts of our own world here just in the United States where you'll have different generations of people focusing on other things. You know, even in the workplace, you see it. Some of the younger employees that you may come in contact with in the world have poor social skills when dealing with customer service, but man, they can just operate that computer like it's nothing. They can, you know, they can type up any kind of information you need and bring up whatever you need to answer your questions. They work that register like it takes 2 seconds. You come up with somebody older as an employee, an older person, they have great customer service skills. They have great interaction with you. They smile. They take a couple extra minutes to listen to you, and they might struggle on the computer a little bit. Mm-hmm. So everybody's bringing something different to the table. Everybody's bringing something of value to the world. And I think if we focus on staying connected, if that's what society would focus on, you know, I think we could maybe turn this whole thing around, because it scares me a little bit personally to see a family out at dinner and everybody's looking in their phone.
Yeah, I mean, that real lack of attachment that exists now. You know, even you see people on a first date who are both on a phone, and that lack of attachment just to our own humanity and that need, you know, to connect with another human being.
Yes, absolutely. And yet that you would think that would be a critical moment, right?
Right.
The first date. Let me get to know the person sitting across from me. Maybe they're texting to each other back and forth,
right,
even though they're sitting at the table, then they could be talking because it just feels safer, you know? And it is that whole attachment piece, like you said, like Facebook is a way to be attached but not really attached.
Right.
Like, don't you get that good feeling when you like somebody's comment or you like a picture somebody put up? You feel like you're being encouraging to them. You feel like you're being a part of their life. But in reality, you're completely disconnected from them. You're not speaking to them. You're not even looking at them. You're just merely commenting on something that they've done that they posted for the world to see.
Well, thank you, Bill. We'll be right back after this short break.
You're listening to Recovery Talk live right here on AM 600 and FM 100.3, The Answer. No matter where you're listening, you can be a part of the conversation today. This is a live program, and the number to call is 904-222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Back to Recovery Talk in just about 1 minute right here on AM 600 and FM 100.3, The Answer.
The Refuge, a healing place, is a leading treatment program for men and women struggling with addictions, trauma, and co-occurring issues such as depression. The Refuge is nationally renowned for working with its clients to create real, long-term recovery. With their caring staff, you begin to unravel the underlying causes of your issues and gain the strength to accept and overcome them. They take a unique trauma-aware approach to treating addiction and co-occurring issues that emphasizes holistic treatment of the mind, body, and spirit. Their safe private campus is located an hour north of Orlando in Ocala, Florida, and features residential and outpatient treatment as well as drug detox. You can call them for a free confidential consultation, 866-612-6610, or visit their website, therefuge-ahealingplace.com. Welcome back to Recovery Talk on AM 600, The Answer, brought to you by The Refuge, a healing place. The Refuge is a leading treatment center for men and women struggling with trauma, depression, and addiction. To be a part of the show, call now, 904-222-TALK. That's 904-222-8255. Once again, The Refuge expert staff members.
Welcome back to Recovery Talk. We are here with Bill Kinlock, Director of Alumni and Family Services at the Refuge, a Healing Place. Before the break, we were discussing the impact of neglect on a child and how the breakdown of the family has affected society. And Bessel van der Kolk argues that childhood trauma is probably today's single most important public health challenge, and a challenge that could be overcome by appropriate prevention and intervention. And I really want to, you know, take this opportunity to have Recovery Talk also be, you know, a very solution-focused program. So, Bill, how do we begin to break this cycle of abuse?
Well, really, just awareness, just education. We learn a lot of mixed signals when we're growing up, to respect our elders, to listen to other people, but it's not always elders that are taking the best care of us. You know, they say stranger danger when you're a child, you know, and don't talk to strangers. Well, most abuse in whatever form is from people we know, family members or friends or neighbors. It's never usually some stranger. It's like 3%, I think, is the percentage of strangers that actually do anything. So really just awareness, just talk about stuff. You know, everyone's so afraid to talk about domestic violence and abuse, and as children we're told to just be quiet and be good and stop crying, and all these different signals we get that make us not feel okay about feeling our feelings, not being okay about, you know, why did you hit me, you know. There's outstanding programs out in the world. Here at the Refuge, we do a program called RAD, is Rape and Aggression Defense. There's also a RAD for kids. The RAD doesn't stand for Rape Aggression Defense, but it's a huge awareness program for children. 3.5 years old to about 11 or so, right before kids kind of make that, you know, change in their shift of focus. And it empowers kids. It lets them know it's not okay if Uncle, you know, Bob hugs you and you feel creepy to go meet hug him because Mom said so. You know, you're allowed to say, hey, I don't want to do that. It makes me feel uncomfortable. It gives children a voice so that they can talk and be heard. It's not okay for the children's voice to just be pushed aside. You know, it's keep talking and keep letting people know until someone pays attention to you. Maybe the people in your immediate family don't. Keep talking. Tell your parents, tell any, you know, tell uncles, aunts, teachers, anybody. Your voice is important. How you feel matters. You're feeling that way for a reason. You know what I mean? It's not, just don't neglect it. For the program here at The Refuge, it's a survivor's program for women. And it's an awesome program, and it's an honor for me to work with these women and get them their power back. Anyone that's been in a domestic abuse situation or in a rape situation, it takes everything from you. It's devastating. And to help these women understand that their voice is powerful and that they are strong and there's things, steps they can take to keep themselves safe. And it's not just physical steps, but there's lots of ways you can learn, which maybe you didn't learn growing up, and that's not anybody's fault, but let's learn them now. You know, you did the best you could. You're standing here in the room. You survived whatever happened to you. We're very grateful for that, and let's hope this never happens again, and let's take steps to learn. You know what I mean? Let's talk about it and get all this stuff out. We have, I'm a member of ACOA. That's an awesome support group. Al-Anon is a great support group. That are all these programs are all over the world. RAD is a program that's usually sponsored by police stations or colleges. You can just look up RAD, R-A-D, and RAD Kids, and all the other programs will all pop up on the screen. You can find out where those local programs are. If you're just a parent and you're struggling with, you know, am I doing the right thing? You know, I said to myself when I was growing up, I'm never going to be like my parents, or I'm never going to do that thing that my parents did that I hated so much. And then you find yourself doing it. And I know that's my reality. You know, there's the book, you mentioned Primal Wound before. That's an outstanding book on being adopted, on losing that bond with your maternal mother. I highly recommend that book. It helped me greatly, and I recommend that to anyone who's been in an adoption situation, whether it's as a child or later on in life, doesn't matter. The Four Agreements is an outstanding book, just to kind of give you a quick overview on how should I conduct myself every day. The Untethered Soul by Michael Singer, outstanding book. Understanding of feelings and just, it's deeper than I can explain to you right now on the radio, but awesome, awesome stuff. Just Google domestic violence. You wouldn't believe all the help stuff that comes up just Googling domestic violence. Not only is there stories of domestic violence and histories of domestic violence, but there's help, you know, right there, computer touch away. You know, there's books to read, there's people to talk to. Almost every town that I've been a part of, there's been rape crisis centers, there's help within the police station can hook you up with any type of domestic abuse shelters to get yourself into a safe place. There's education centers for children to learn, you know, hey, it's not okay for you to live in fear. It's not okay for you to, you know, to be worried about physical retaliation or emotional retaliation, whatever that might be, for speaking out.
Yeah, and I think it's important, you know, we focus a lot on victims, as we should, and but I think it's also important for our listeners out there who may be struggling with some anger management issues or maybe the perpetrator of domestic violence and really want to get help, that there's help for them too. You know, you can reach out to a therapist, you can, you know, call an anger management hotline, and it's important for us to realize that, you know, we need to treat the whole issue and not just, you know, not just the victims.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of times, like you referred to, a perpetrator is someone, a lot of times, who had that same thing happen to them. That's how the thoughts got in there. That's how they think that's, you know, I hate to throw the word again, but a normal way to live your life. You know, that in some way it's acceptable. You know, and you may be wrestling with any of those thoughts or ideas. You know, there is help to understand that, hey, what happened to you was wrong, and it wasn't okay. And although there was no one there to protect you, you can be there to protect yourself now. You can be that person, that hero in your life that you needed when you were a kid. You can be your own advocate to do what's right. You know, you don't have to live in that cycle of abuse, whatever that is, whether you're the perpetrator or not. You're still acting out in a cycle of abuse, and it doesn't have to go on. That there is a lot of help available.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the things that I think is so great about your job, and you know, part of what we mentioned briefly at the top of the show is that you also work a lot with our alumni. So you've gotten to see the real success stories of Family Week. These people who've come in, and these families who were broken, for a lack of a better word, and dysfunctional, and you really got to see how they came out on the other end. Can you speak a little, you know, to kind of how you've seen that grow?
Yeah, that's, I would have to say, other than, you know, the Family Week, watching the actual change happen, to watch the change continue. I have friends on my Facebook list that are parents that came here for Family Week. Just people that come here that are so willing, that so want their, whoever their family member is, whether it be a, you know, a child or a spouse or whatever, to get better, to get help for what's troubling them. That passion doesn't go away. And when you see them heal their wounds here, and then they move on their lives, and you see great things, you see them, you know, them posting pictures of being on vacation. I mean, you know, there could be a family, the parents were going to split up, and the mom was here for treatment. And you knew it, you know, you knew when they were coming here for Family Week, that could have been the turning point. You know what I mean? That they're here and this could bring it all together, or it all could fall apart, you know, on a certain day during a certain session. And, you know, I'm here and I've talked to the family member on the cart that's here for Family Week, and they express their fears to me and their hopes for, you know, what could be. But their hurt and their frustration is there too, you know, and that's what brought them there. It's the pain. The pain brought them there. And then after, you know, 3 or 4 hour session, maybe they get out and there's tears and there's laughter and there's smiles and there's hope. Again, you can see it in their faces, and it's just wonderful. And then as alumni director, I get to keep in touch with everyone here. June Carter is also one of the alumni relations people, that my only other employee basically, that works and reaches out. And we get to see these people doing well. We get to hear the wonderful things, the babies they're having, the successful relationships they're having, the anniversaries of sobriety dates. And it's just, it's the most beautiful part of the job, because you get to see, we got to see them get here sometimes at their lowest. And then we get to see them, you know, years later, just living out this unimaginable life that they never even dreamed of. And they're doing it. They're not talking about it. They're doing it. It's just, it's the greatest pump. It just makes me want to come to work every day and do the best I can.
Yeah, and you know, like you said, that release of energy, those tears, that, you know, it finally kind of takes the power away. And I think one of the greatest gifts that, you know, that we give families at the Refuge, and that other programs like RAD and give families, are those new coping skills that they need. And I want to let everyone know we are coming to the end of our program. And if, under the care of a mental health professional, individuals who've experienced trauma or been the victims of abuse can process those feelings and come out on the other end with a better understanding of where they are. There's lots of treatment options out there. And learning new coping skills and having a greater sense of self-awareness can really decrease the likelihood that the cycle of violence is going to continue. If you are looking for help for yourself or someone you know, the Refuge has counselors available for a confidential telephone consultation. All you have to do is call 877-762-1811 or visit the website www.therefuge-ahealingplace.com. The most important thing is that you take the first step and ask for help now. Bill, I want to thank you so much for sharing your time with us this afternoon. It's been wonderful to speak with you and to have you share your experience with us. And I hope you enjoyed your time with us.
It was outstanding. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Guys, we'll be back next week, same time, same place, to talk about recovery. Have a wonderful evening, everyone.
Thanks for tuning in today to Recovery Talk. Join our expert staff members from the Refuge, A Healing Place, next Sunday to talk about treatment for alcoholism, substance abuse, trauma, or depression. We're here to help. If you need help for yourself, a loved one, or a family member, you can call 866-612-6610, 866-612-6610.